This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn in the Bigger Picture with me, Dasharan Johan. In 2017, Malaysian musician Panirselvam Parandaman was found guilty by the Singapore High Court for trafficking 51.8 grams of diamorphine at the Woodlands checkpoint in 2014. He was then sentenced to death. The 33-year-old Panir has been in prison ever since. Today, I'm joined on Skype by Angelia Parandaman, who is Panir's sister, and Latifa Koya, a human rights activist and an advisor at Lawyers for Liberty, to talk about what Panir has been going through so far and also discuss if there's a need for us to abolish the death penalty. Hello and welcome to the show. Before we dive into the topic, Angelia, I just want to ask you, is your brother coping okay, your family? It's been 6 years now, right, since Panir went to prison?
Hello, hi, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity, BFM. He's fine now. He's okay. Since he has been in the prison since 2014. So being in the prison, when he's inside, he realized a couple of things. It's the time to reflect on how he came to GB and work, leaving a big family. So my parents and we are coping with the issue so far. It's very sad and very burdening for the family, actually.
Okay, so let's talk about drug trafficking. Legally speaking, Latifa, what constitutes drug trafficking in Singapore? How much illegal narcotics do you need to have on you to be considered a drug trafficker or a courier? And what is the punishment? I know the amount is different for different drugs. Maybe you can give us an overview and also tell us how they compare to the laws we have in Malaysia.
Obviously, drug trafficking, the understanding of what is drug trafficking is similar to in Malaysia as well as Singapore. Mm-hmm. There is a presumption if at a certain level of the amount that is carried by a list or scheduled drugs which is banned, then it would be presumed that it's not for consumption, but it is for trafficking based on the amount that is carried. But in comparatively speaking, in Singapore, it's far more less the amount to be actually found or be caught for trafficking compared to Malaysia. But otherwise, the trafficking laws are very much similar in Singapore and Malaysia. Both carries mandatory death penalty as punishment.
Now, Latifa, are the current laws that are in place working? There are plenty of studies that show that the war on drugs, particularly in the US, has been pretty much a catastrophe. In fact, there are evidence to suggest that their tactics such as mass incarceration and the death penalty has done nothing but overpopulate prisons and fuel the illegal drug industry even more. Would you say it's the same in Malaysia and Singapore?
Well, it depends on how do you view whether the war on drugs have won. Is it ongoing? Has there been a change in strategy? Because if you say that there is an increased number of users or addicts on drugs, that is still very high. And if you say that because we have so-called very serious, very high punishment and sentences, would that make the people who, you know, traffic less? That doesn't seem to be the case as well. It's not a deterrent. So I think it's a false notion that having severe punishment is in fact one strategy in our war against drugs. We may have to rethink because of the manner in which people are trafficking and the manner in which drugs are being produced and being promoted.
So let's hone in on drug mules. For those who might not know, a mule is someone who personally smuggles contraband across a border for a smuggling organization or syndicate. There are many ways these drugs are carried across the border, which includes hiding it in a vehicle or even using one's body as a container. And whenever there are reports of drug mules being caught or put on death row, there are loads of people who tend not to think much about it or just say, yeah, well, they're drug mules, they deserve it, who cares? But Latifa, is it as plain and simple as that?
Well, of course not. In the end, drug mules are easily dispensable, meaning that if I were to look at a warlord, they will have plenty of people to be targeted as possible mules, possible people who can be recruited to be drug mules and carry over or cross over, whether it's the borders across the country to, you know, to help with the trafficking. And if out of the 10 people that they have used, two gets arrested, that doesn't mean their trafficking process stops. So in the end, who are the people that is arrested? It's just the drug mules and not the, you know, the actual warlords or the people who are behind these major syndicates. So again, arresting and convicting and hanging drug mules have never resolved. And in fact, sometimes we would look at it in a more sinister fashion, meaning that every year for the purpose of, you know, a KPI, you know, I would cynically say that as long as I can pick and arrest and charge a couple of mules, I am seen as having done my job. But did that stop other mules from continuing their work? That is why they're called mules, you know, because they are recruited. A lot of them are innocent. A lot of them come from very poor background, from a situation where they are recruited, not knowing their fate if they are arrested.
And Angelia, I'd like to bring you into the conversation here. Latifa brought up how drug mules are generally individuals that come from poor backgrounds who get manipulated by these big-time kingpins. How do these drug mules get manipulated? Maybe you can share what you know about how your brother found himself in this situation.
Actually, it's all started when Panir took a month off. That's how he got manipulated, like took a month off and he came back to Malaysia to renew his expiring passport. And when he was renting a room in JB, so there's much of free time for him. And that's where he started to visit a gambling den in JB often. So that's where he met his drug recruiter. His real name is Shanmugam. Shanmugam manipulated Panir Solum by gaining his trust by rejecting the money Panir offered him after Shanmugam told Panir about his financial problem. Shanmugam said, "I just want a friend to share my problem and talk about my problem. I don't want money from you." So in this way, he earns a good reputation in Panir's heart, like faking has a fake friend. Actually, the relationship, to be honest, it's not for a long time what their relationship was, because Panir just got to know Shanmugam just for more than 2 weeks. So it's a very short period of time where the drug recruiters, they are very smart not to reveal any personal details during the conversation, like where he's actually staying, what his actual name, and they like gain the trust, supporting the drug mules or their thoughts, maybe giving them money when they need. And then finally, after 1 or 2 weeks, when the time comes, they have just betrayed them.
And Latifa, do you find this to be a pattern across the region?
Yes, indeed. It is not just in Singapore, but that is how drug trafficking has flourished, and it works throughout the world. That's been going on around the world. It's almost similar, the patterns.
So how do we stop this from happening? The laws don't seem to be effective. Do we need reform, better education? How do we tackle the issue of low-level drug mules getting manipulated by giant syndicates, you know, and then they get caught, they get thrown in prison, or they even get sentenced to death, but the cycle just continues?
Well, let's look at it this way. Whenever a situation you have very high punishment, then the chances are if an offender or someone gets arrested, if the punishment is very severe, then obviously they would want to get out of it rather than being sent to court and face the trial. Then comes the issue of possible bribery, trying to get out of the system. And what is the, you know, what is in return for a favor from the people in authority, right? So a lot of them would turn to become informants. Look, I will give you information and then you let me go. So that is the kind of things that happens and the kind of deals that will be made over the course, because you want to get out of a severe punishment. If you were to put as high as death penalty, How do you solve the problem? A lot of them will try to get out of it. Authorities and police officers, people who knows that, look, this is one way for me to make a quick buck. And if that is the case, I will dangle death penalty on them and they will probably, want to compromise. So this doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't become a deterrent. In fact, it actually increases the possibility of more bribery, more cover-ups, because once you arrest, then the person goes to jail and gets hanged. That's the end of the story, So it doesn't solve the trafficking problem. You just got rid of one mule. That's how it is. So, and for the warlords, they'll just have to recruit more. So this whole concept of having very high punishment, especially capital punishment, has never been proven to be a deterrent factor. So we must be, we must do more research. Countries that have punishments which are more humane, sentences which are more humane, rehabilitative in its nature, have proven to have far less crime than countries that have very, very severe punishment. So I think it's time we open up and start analyzing and go for that more civilized way of looking at things.
All right. Okay, we do need to take a quick break. But when we come back, Angelia Latifa and I will continue our conversation on drug trafficking and explore if there's a need to abolish the death penalty. Stay tuned. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Dashan Johan and I'm joined by Latifa Koya, a human rights activist and an advisor at Lawyers for Liberty, as well as Angelia Parandhanam. And we are having a conversation on Paneerselvam Parandhanam, who is Angelia's brother, who has been sentenced to death by the Singapore High Court for trafficking 51.8 grams of diamorphine at Woodlands Checkpoint in 2014. And we are talking about Paneer's struggle so far and also discuss the death penalty and why we need to consider abolishing it. So now, Angelia, you and your family have been pushing hard to seek clemency from the Singapore government to remove the death penalty that Paneer is currently facing. What has that process been like?
Okay, the status of his case is still pending, waiting for a date, because this year, February 11 and 12, new court file that was filed by the Paneer's lawyer got dismissed, and the lawyer have filed another affidavit to Court of Appeal. So currently, we are waiting for a date from the court. Actually, the struggle is a lot and it's very tough. We still have this hope that there's a chance for Paneer to change his death sentence to life imprisonment. If the authorities have looked into his case and are willing to help us with the information that Paneer have given, it's either Malaysia authority or Singapore authority are willing to help us in this issue so that we can manage to get a certificate of cooperation for Paneer with the information that he gave. So through this chance, we believe that there's still opportunity for him to not get into the gallows.
I've also read that you and your family are working with human rights activists and NGOs to push for the abolishment of the death penalty. Why do you think capital punishment should be abolished?
As a whole picture, I and my family, we are working to with the NGOs and also other association in abolishing the death penalty. Why is that so? Because I realize that death penalty is not a solution. Especially when we're talking about drug issues and drug mule, drug traffickers. So it's not a solution for them. And many, if you look at in Malaysia, there are like about 1,314 people on death row currently. And majority, like 75% of them are for drug trafficking thing. And a majority of them are foreign nations, and especially women on death row, women from Thailand, Iran, some Indonesia. So these people who supposed not to face execution. So I think this is unnecessary. They have to face the death penalty. We can do something because they have been tricked. They have been manipulated. Many of them are from uneducated background. They came here to look for money. So it's not right to put them to death in the means of law. So that's why I think my family should work with the organization to help them to bring their voice out. It is a way because we are affected as well. We know the pain and we can feel how the families of the affected people are going through, especially the drug mules.
Now, Latifa, whenever these stories are shared by families with members on that row, people tend to brush it off and say, you know, we can't listen to a sob story by one family and change our laws because of that. So let me ask you, as someone whose field of expertise is human rights, should we abolish the death penalty?
Of course. I mean, I can't imagine anything else. It's the year 2020, mm-hmm. and we are still sentencing people and then, you know, putting a noose around their neck and pull it out and snuff the life out of them. Where is that coming from? That is one of the most inhumane behavior and uncivilized. And what do you do if you suddenly found out, which has happened, that that person may be innocent after all? Can you bring that person back to life? And not only that, we not only have death sentences around, we also have mandatory death sentence, which means we do not leave any discretion for the judges to listen to that person, to listen to their case, and find out how did this person get involved, get lured into this drug trafficking, or how did this person get convicted for murder, what drove them to that. All those things have been thrown out of the window because you have made it mandatory death sentence. In the case of capital punishment or death penalty, it is time to go. We are talking about a majority of the countries in the world that has actually done away and abolished death penalty. We're on our way there. I believe Malaysia is one of those countries. In practice, they have held off and had put up moratorium on the carrying out of the death sentences. Right. And therefore, we are one up probably compared to Singapore. Whereas in Singapore, they've been hanging people almost every year and in a proud fashion.
And what is Singapore's justification for it? Why still carry on with what many consider to be a draconian law?
Well, I believe they come from that old school of thought, which says that the higher the punishment, the more severe the punishment would deter people from committing crime, even though evidence and research would actually show the opposite. So we're not living in that kind of times now. And why don't we look at the countries that have got more humane way of dealing with offenders and seeing why are their crime index low as opposed to those who have very severe punishment. So I think it's about time. Do we want to be seen as civilized, or do we just want to be seen as very strict and therefore we mean business, or we mean business when we deal with trafficking? It's all about how you want to deal with it. I think it's about time, and I believe we are on our way there. But it is a very treacherous road, and it's a very steep road. But I think if all of us start thinking like human being and a civilized society, and we would come to that understanding that it's not the way to go.
Yes. For the record, though, in what many are considering an exceptional case, as reported by Straits Times on October 19th, a Malaysian drug runner escaped the gallows after a 5-judge court of appeal reversed a 2018 decision to convict him of capital charge. But Latifa, maybe this is going to be the million-dollar question, right? Has the death penalty proven to be a viable form of crime control? Because there are some who argue that, sure, while like you mentioned, there's the one-off chance that someone might be found innocent down the road, but do a couple of lives actually matter in the grand scheme of things when the death penalty, they say, is preventing crime on a large scale? So has the death penalty been effective in controlling crime?
Certainly not. So the argument that we can do away with a couple of mistakes by killing some people accidentally because it is said to have the larger benefit of reducing the crime.
Right.
Argument no longer holds because it has been proven that it doesn't reduce the crime.
Mm.
And one, if we were to study the mental state of someone who is about to commit the crime, whether it's murder, whether it's a severe, whether it's rape and murder, whether it's robbery, whichever that carries a death sentence or drug trafficking, the person who commits that crime does not stop to think, oh, wait a minute, there's death sentence, so I should stop doing it. It doesn't work that way. People who commit the crime normally do it because they think they will not be caught, and they do it because they think they can get away. So it is not about considering the severity of the offense. Otherwise, we will never have murder anymore. If one were to know that murder will bring about death penalty, would people stop killing each other? It doesn't work that way, because what drives a person to murder, to commit an offense, is not because they thought of the consequence of the death of the punishment. So I think what we need to do is have better enforcement, better investigation, so that you can catch the person, catch the offender. But what you do with that person is something else altogether. So I think, like you say, people who claim that, oh, you know, we are expecting all these offenders to be free, you know, drug is a serious crime. Nobody is saying that those who commit drug offenses will be released for free. For example, what is Paneer doing right now? He's been in jail for 6 years.
Mm.
Is that a punishment? Isn't that time that is given for him to reflect what he has done? Where is the mercy of that? You know, where is that process that he has actually gone through punishment by being in behind prisons for a long time? So to say that we are letting go people for having murdered someone, that is not true. There is such thing as life sentences. There is such thing as going for prison punishment or any other rehabilitative punishment.
Now, there are people who argue that drugs are a cancer to society and ruins the lives of so many people. Hence, drug traffickers should be hanged. Angelia, is this a valid argument to you?
Agreed, as Madam Latifa has mentioned just now, agreed that the drugs are cancer of the society and ruins the life of so many people. However, hanging drug mule doesn't stop or decrease the drug crime. It's not a solution. In fact, it's like the government are trying to run away from the huge responsibility of finding the drug lords. So drug trafficking are just a tool for the drug lords to push the drug, to push the drug activities.
I think it's about creating awareness. Do we look at addiction as a medical problem, or do we look at it as a problem in a criminal fashion? So decriminalize drug addiction would be a first step. It would be much easier for us to deal with things. So once you start looking at everything in the most criminal punitive fashion, you will not go far. And you will drive those people right underground, and it will be, again, as usual, the black market situation.
And what will it take for us to abolish the death penalty? We know that the Malaysian Bar Council has renewed its push to abolish the death penalty. Do you see Malaysia abolishing the death penalty anytime soon? And what about Singapore?
Well, I'm hopeful. As far as Malaysia is concerned, I think there are already moved towards that. The fact that we have been having one of the longest moratorium on carrying out death sentences or execution, I think we do have hope. What we need to do is basically give the research and study, not in a political, emotional fashion, but in a fashion where it shows that having a death sentence have not reduced the crime. So go by that and people will understand. But unfortunately, we have people who had the opportunity of sitting in power after campaigning against death penalty. But when they sat and had the power, they started questioning their own belief or push for removing death penalty. Why? Because there is that sense that a certain large community may be against the abolition of death penalty, and we want their votes. We want to be remaining popular. So therefore, we do not bring up this issue, because abolishing death penalty is still perceived by the larger community as something which will not solve crime, and they think that that is bad. So we do not bring awareness to the people why we need to get rid of death penalty. And we do not help by bringing an alternative solution as to what do you do with drug offences or drug offenders, or even for any other crime for that matter. We can still do it. And I am quite hopeful that Malaysia is on its way. And hopefully, Singapore being our neighbour, will start realising that it's about time we join the civilised nation. We can't be selective in wanting to be part of the civilised nation. You can't hang people and still call yourself a progressive nation. It is impossible, you know. And there are about 55 people on death row in Singapore. And a majority of them are coming from the poorer community, from the Malays, from the Indians. And why is that so? So those are the questions that we would ask. It's similar in Malaysia as well. But it goes back to how we want to do the campaign. And whether we've already started looking at alternative ways to deal with the problem of drugs, and also the problem of having severe punishment for any other offences.
So you mentioned awareness. So let's talk about the song that your brother Paneer has done with singer Santhish. It's called Ara Tuju. That's the name of the song. I know that Santhish composed and sang for the track, which lyrics was written by your brother from inside prison. Angela, tell me a little bit about the song.
Talking about the song, the experience of collaborating with Santhish Kumar and also Madam Latifa Koya is a new positive experience overall. I'm still learning about this project. It's music from Date Row. So I would think it would be effective collaboration in build awareness among Malaysians on how the Date Row prisoners suffer, the plight of all the prisoners and their desperation for a second chance can be seen in this album. And it's an interesting experience and as well as challenging in terms of making it happen. Because Paneer have written the lyrics last year around July and passed it to me when we visit him in the prison. And when he gave me the lyrics, he described to me how the prisoners inside suffer their desperation to look at the sunlight and, you know, to go back to home, miss their families, because they also have stories, they also have families behind them, how normal people will have. When he wrote this song, he was placed in a punishment cell, which we call it as a punishment cell because it's very small. It's 3x3 footstep, and the reason that the prisoner, the SPS, Singapore Prison Service, gave was they are renovating the current cell, so they have to put about like 12 dead row inmates in this smaller room. And when the room was like very dim and it's very hot because there's no fan, the cell is located in the middle of the building and no sunlight at all. Paneer was placed as the placed at the last room, where we can say no exposed to sunlight at all. So the cell window is completely blocked by the metal netting with no natural light entering the cell. So it's very hot, sweaty at night, and there's no ventilation. The air only comes in through the small space in the door, and there's like only two slots. Space slots, and it's always locked by outside. It will only be open upon the request if the inmates want us, the officers, to open, so they will open. And in this kind of situation, Paneer wrote the lyrics, and he explained to me how his inmates, how other inmates there, desperately, like some of them can like go psycho living 24/7 inside the small room. Sometimes they even neglect, they don't want to see their own family members during the visit. So this how psycho they can go, and it's been years they have breathed a new fresh air. They are just waiting die. And I the way my brother described, actually I tears dropped from my face, actually my eyes. So it was very touching, and their desperation to come back home or second chance. They just want to prove themselves. If the government or the authority gives them a second chance, it will be better.
That is absolutely heartbreaking to hear. Before I wrap up, Latifa, do you have a final message for our listeners in regards to the abolishment of the death penalty?
Well, of course, I think in the end, we all, in our small way, try to contribute various ways to create awareness about the evil of death penalty and the complete impracticality of death penalty. It doesn't help. But at the end of the day, since we are talking about the song as well,
yeah.
I hope that you will have the opportunity to even hear a snippet of that song, because it is for the first time was written by someone who's actually facing the real thing, and that the words that was written, it is in Malay, it is poetical, but it is also deeply touching because it came from the heart, so it should reach the other hearts of the people. And the song itself is very beautiful, the sound of it. So if you could hear it, and if you know it's coming from someone who has gone through it, I believe that it will reach out to the people to know that any human being can make mistakes and they should be given a second chance.
Angelia, any last words before I let you go?
Yes, talking about the album, the release date have not been fixed, but we are still in the midst of working for some sponsorship to get into the line. So there are actually pre-exclusive interview release for this song by Malaysia Now, and the public can look into it for a rough idea. And talking about the launching of the song and album, we are looking for sponsorship as well from other NGOs or other parties to partner with our new NGO. We also have established an NGO for this cause, officially registered with Registrar of Society. And so all your contribution is tax deductible. So we are also looking for collaboration volunteers to help us with the marketing and PR. So if you want to be part of changing in perception and view of the society towards abolishing the death row or inmates and death sentence itself, do drop me a message at 010-560-5087 or visit our website at safepaneer.info or our Facebook page, Safe Paneer. And it's also in the page of LFL, Lawyer for Liberty.
Well, Angelia, Latifa, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Angelia Parandaman, sister to Malaysian musician Paneer Selvam Parandaman, who is currently on death row in Singapore for trafficking 51.8 grams of diamorphine at Woodlands Checkpoint in 2014, as well as Latifa Koya, a human rights activist and an advisor at Lawyers for Liberty. And we were talking about what Paneer has been going through so far and why it's time to say goodbye to the death penalty. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out our podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or you can even subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search BFM Live and Learn. Once again, I'm Dashrin Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.